is a classic leadership ethics dilemma.
On one side of the dilemma, China. On the other, the U.S. National Basketball Association, the NBA. This is Thursday, October 10th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are a part of this program. Please join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, we look back on the Hong Kong protest. You'll hear more about the possibility of success as U.S.-China trade talks are set to resume. And we have the latest on the political battles that intensify in the United States, all on VOA Asia. Chinese organizers Wednesday canceled a fan event on the eve of the National Basketball Association exhibition game in Shanghai, the latest fallout and a growing dispute over a tweet by a team official supporting the recent protest in Hong Kong. Chinese sponsors and partners have been cutting ties with the NBA after the Twitter post by Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey last week supporting anti-government protest in the Chinese-ruled city. The Shanghai Sports Federation said the cancellation of the fan event ahead of Thursday's game between the Brooklyn Nets and Los Angeles Lakers was due to the inappropriate attitude of Morey and NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. Silver said on Tuesday the league supported Morey's right to exercise his freedom of expression.
The long-held values of the NBA are to support freedom of expression. And certainly freedom of expression by members of the NBA community. And in this case, Daryl Morey, as the general manager of the Houston Rockets, enjoys that right as one of our employees.
That angered authorities and some fans in China and threatened the NBA's business there, said to be worth more than $4 billion. This has brought up what many are saying is an ethical dilemma between the NBA and China. I spoke about that with Anne Skeet. She is Senior Director of Leadership Ethics at Markkula Center for Applied Ethics at Santa Clara University in California.
This is a classic leadership ethics dilemma. So you have someone in the form of Adam Silver, and he has a position, a set of duties as the commissioner of the NBA and that he needs to fulfill. He's also a citizen of the United States, and his organization is based in the United States. So he also has the norms here in our society that he's committed to. And he's finding those two things at tension. And that is not uncommon for many leaders. And we're seeing as more and more companies become global forces, that more and more people in business settings are having to grapple with these tensions.
Now, this all stems from one simple little tweet by the general manager of the Houston Rockets, hailing or promoting or saying he wishes well to the Hong Kong protesters. Why such a strong reaction from China?
Well, China's been consistent in their reaction to anything related to Hong Kong right now, and taking a very consistent hard line against the protests there and the calls there for more voice in the political spectrum. You know, people in Hong Kong are seeking a more democratic form of government than China provides.
The ethics challenge here for the NBA, as I understand it, is that they have been moving toward greater freedom of thought and choice for their players, for their executive staffs, for even the fans. And it's up against money now, and it's up against a lot of money, because there's more money coming from China, the NBA, most of the maybe, than is in the United States, maybe even the rest of the world. So how does Adam Silver balance this?
Well, there is a significant amount of money. I think there's about $4 billion on the line here, so it's not a small amount. He's in a slightly a stronger position in the sense that he has a smaller set of stakeholders to work with. So a traditional company that has many shareholders and stakeholders, it might be difficult for the executive to get a quick handle on their perspective. But dealing with a limited set of owners in the NBA and a revenue sharing model that they all participate in gives him a little bit more, a quicker way to sort of have a pulse on things. I actually think, though, you've struck on the real heart of the matter, though, which is the NBA has taken a pretty public stand on the type of league they intend to be, on certain values that they hold dear, both in the code of conduct for employees at the NBA and in the various mission statements of the teams, and in the NBA Cares effort that they have, which really they identify it as supporting the NBA's mission to uphold and act in social issues. So they've put a pretty clear stake in the ground that they see themselves as an actor in civil society and having a role there beyond just the basketball court. So he's acting consistently with that position.
Are there two ethical targets here? Is there an ethical target for the United States and then an ethical target for China that people act under?
Ethics are really norms that are created in society. And so it certainly is safe to say that China and the United States may have different societal norms that they follow. And there's even more fundamental ones between Eastern and Western civilization in terms of the way people think about family and commitments and which relationships they put in priority first. So there are significant differences, and I think that's a challenge that any multinational enterprise faces, which is how can you be respectful of the culture in the place where you're doing business and still be true to your own values. Adam Silver may be coming up against a moment where he's identified that that can't be done, that he has a primary commitment given the way the NBA has articulated its value set and his beliefs, and he's going to follow those, and he is not going to sort of quash, if you will, commentary by players or managers or other people participating in the NBA.
So how does this end, if at all?
I'm not sure how it will end. I am pretty confident that Adam Silver will continue to hold to the position that he's staked out for the NBA because it seems to be a serious position of both him and the NBA. And we'll see how interested the Chinese are in basketball, but on the NBA's terms.
Ann Skeet, Senior Director of Leadership Ethics at the Markkula Center for Applied Ethics at Santa Clara University in California, speaking with us via Skype. Up next on VOA Asia, we take a look back on the continuing protest in Hong Kong. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now at voanews.com. Officials working quickly to retrieve the bodies of 11 elephants that died after trying to save each other from a waterfall in a national park in central Thailand. Authorities are hoping to a net downstream can catch the bodies as they float down the fast-moving waters. Chinese President Xi Jinping will visit India to hold an informal summit with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi on October 11th and 12th. Thousands of protesters rallied in South Korea's capital for the second consecutive week against Justice Minister Cho Kuk, whose family is at the center of an investigation into allegations of financial crimes and academic favors. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. In Hong Kong, protests that erupted nearly 4 months ago to oppose a controversial extradition law have developed into a disruptive pro-democracy movement, led to increasingly violent clashes between protesters and police, and posing a serious challenge to China's rule over this former British colony. VOA's Brian Patton reports on how Hong Kong got to this point.
Hong Kong is in the midst of an uncompromising standoff between increasingly defiant pro-democracy protesters and equally determined government forces backed by Beijing.
We will do it again and again until the government will break down.
The root of the current conflict dates back to 1997 when China agreed to allow Hong Kong a semi-autonomous government for at least 50 years after it took back control of the former British colony. The one country, two systems model allows popular elections for about half the legislature, but other seats are selected by elites with business interests in China, and Beijing appoints the Hong Kong chief executive. More recently, in 2014, the Umbrella Revolution demonstrations shut down business districts in the city for months over growing concerns that China, under President Xi Jinping, is seeking to undermine the independence and civil liberties in Hong Kong. This year in March, protests again erupted over a proposed extradition bill that critics said would erode the independent judiciary of Hong Kong and subject critics of mainland China to increased risk of arrest. In August, concerns mounted that Beijing would intervene after Chinese riot police conducted exercises in nearby Shenzhen. But so far, the military has stayed on the sidelines. Protesters have employed increasingly disruptive and destructive tactics, vandalizing businesses and the city's subway system, and engaging in clashes with police. The Hong Kong government abandoned the extradition bill, but the protesters since added demands for direct popular elections. Pro-Beijing hardliners say the democracy movement's goal is to win independence from China.
One could interpret the continued protests as reflecting that goal. I don't, but I can see how Beijing would.
Police have used increasing force to quell the protests, employing water cannons, rubber bullets, and tear gas. During massive protests held to spoil China's Communist Party anniversary, a police officer for the first time shot a protester with lethal ammunition. Hong Kong leaders have increasingly focused on the radical elements in the protest movement as a threat to public safety and recently banned protesters from wearing masks in public.
We are particularly concerned that many students are participating in these violent protests or even riots, jeopardizing their safety and even their future.
Protesters have vowed to continue their struggle for democracy while the Hong Kong leadership promises further emergency measures if public order is not soon restored. Brian Patton, VOA News, Hong Kong.
Happening now in Asia news, the United Nations said Wednesday recent U.S. airstrikes on alleged drug processing facilities in Afghanistan that killed more than 30 civilians, including children, were not lawful. Casualties occurred last May in western Farah and adjoining Nimruz provinces, where the U.S. bombed more than 60 sites, identifying them as drug production plants, according to extensive fact-finding by the U.N. Assistance Mission in Afghanistan. We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The United States is imposing visa restrictions on the Chinese government and Communist Party officials for their alleged mistreatment of Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities. Those on the list will be unable to buy various high-tech parts and components from U.S. companies without Washington's permission. All of this as the Beijing and the U.S. are scheduled to begin a new round of trade talks. AP correspondent Mike Hempen has more.
Vendors are barred from selling U.S. technology to the Chinese tech companies without government permission. The sanctions are an added strain for U.S.-Chinese relations and have caused concern about their possible impact on the global economy during a time when growth is slowing.
The visa restrictions could deepen divisions between Washington and Beijing at a critical juncture in their 15-month trade war that has roiled financial markets and triggered a slowdown in the global economy. President Trump and his top economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, spoke in generally upbeat terms about this week's discussions with China, the first such high-level talks in more than 2 months, but Trump insisted he would not be satisfied with a partial deal. Pressed to elaborate on the chances of progress this week, Trump sounded skeptical, saying, "Can something happen? I guess. Maybe. Who knows? But I think it's probably unlikely." Meanwhile, the Chinese Communist Party's official newspaper, People's Daily, on Tuesday said the talks could go three ways, namely both sides reaching a fair deal, the talks completely falling apart, or maintaining the state of talking while retaliating. Coming your way, we look into the attempt to impeach the U.S. president. This is VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. subscribe for free, and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Chinese President Xi Jinping said Wednesday he was watching the situation in Kashmir and would support Pakistan in issues related to its core interests. That according to the official Xinhua news agency. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. Checking political news from the United States, opposition Democrats are moving ahead with their impeachment inquiry of President Donald Trump, even as the administration blocks key witnesses from testifying and has now been slow to provide documents. Eventually, Democrats may vote to impeach Trump over his dealings with Ukraine in the House of Representatives, where they have a majority. That would lead to an impeachment trial in the Senate, where the president and his Republican supporters have a distinct advantage and, as of now, would likely vote to acquit him. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the president's political firewall from Washington.
At the White House, President Trump remains defiant in the face of the Democratic impeachment inquiry.
What they did to this country is unthinkable. And it's lucky that I'm the president, because I guess, I don't know what, a lot of people said very few people could handle it. I sort of thrive on it. You know why? Because it's so important.
At the heart of the impeachment inquiry is Trump's effort to convince other nations to investigate a political rival, former Vice President Joe Biden. Democrats see the president's actions as an abuse of power. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff.
This is one of the few impeachment inquiries in the history of our country. It goes to the core of whether the president abused his office to seek political help in his reelection campaign and did so to the detriment of our nation's security.
Trump has denied any wrongdoing and said his focus was fighting corruption, not politics. Republican lawmakers who have defended the president dismiss any impeachment move. But the Democratic House may be headed toward making Trump only the third U.S. president to be impeached, says legal analyst Paul Schiff Berman.
These are extraordinarily serious allegations. I'm not sure there's ever been a time in our history where we've had a president who has conducted foreign policy for his own personal political gain.
Impeachment in the House is only a first step, says William Galston.
If there are articles of impeachment voted in the House of Representatives, which in the U.S. system serves as the sort of the prosecutor making the case, but the real jury is the Senate of the United States, and there it would take a two-thirds majority to remove President Trump from office.
Republicans hold a majority in the Senate, and the president remains confident about what would happen if an impeachment trial took place.
And then we'll get it to the Senate, and we're going to win. The Republicans have been very unified. This is the greatest witch hunt in the history of our country.
Convicting the president and removing him from office would require a two-thirds vote in the Senate, or 67 of the 100 members. That would be a tall order for Democrats based on what we know now, says William Galston.
That would mean that 20 Republican senators out of 53 would have to join with the Democrats in order to carry out that act. And that requires a much broader coalition of support across party lines than we've seen so far.
The last impeachment trial in the Senate came in 1999, when President Bill Clinton was acquitted of the charges related to his affair with intern Monica Lewinsky. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This news break from VOA Asia, fossils of a large carnivorous dinosaur that was a top predator about 115 million years ago have been unearthed in Thailand, a group that was among the early members of an impressive group of flesh-ripping dinosaurs known for their shark-like teeth. Scientists said the dinosaur named Siamraptor Sawatthi was more than 26 feet or 9 meters long and weighed at least 3.5 tons. All the big and scary dinosaur stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. A groundbreaking new device is helping those who were blind see in a new way by helping them perceive the world around them. More now from VOA's Carol Pearson.
Jason Esterhazen never thought he'd be able to see light or movement again after a car accident left him blind. But with the flick of a switch, his world suddenly grew brighter.
Wow.
I still can't put it into words. I mean, from being able to see absolutely nothing, it's pitch black, to all of a sudden seeing little flickers of light move around.
While it's not normal sight, Esterhazen can navigate the world around him. Dr. Nader Paradian is one of the researchers at the UCLA Medical Center.
Being able to tell where a doorway is, being able to tell where the sidewalk begins or ends, or where the crosswalk is, are all extremely meaningful events that can help these people regain some form of independence.
Here's how it works. A small generator is implanted into the brain. The other parts consist of a video camera on a pair of sunglasses and a processing unit that can fit in a pocket. When the user points the camera in a particular direction, a signal is sent to the processing unit and then back to the glasses, which communicate wirelessly with the implanted generator. This stimulates a pattern on the visual cortex of the brain and allows users to detect movement and patterns of light. And it all happens in a matter of seconds. Paradian says this technology is a first.
We basically have the video camera and the video processing unit functioning or performing the functions of what the eye normally does.
Esterhazen is one of two people in the U.S. testing this technology.
There's little white dots on a black background. It's like looking up at the stars at night.
The technology, called Orion, is manufactured by a company called Second Sight. It's being tested at the UCLA Medical Center and the Baylor College of Medicine. As he learns what each flicker of light represents, Esterhazen is helping this technology become more useful.
Someone moving across the room, walking past me or walking away from me, or it's a light against the wall. It was just amazing to have some form of functional vision again.
Esterhazen can now do everyday activities he once could not.
Crossing the road is much easier now, much safer for me, because I can look down and just follow the white line on that's painted on the road.
The researchers believe that one day this technology could help people who have lost their vision due to illnesses like glaucoma or diabetes, as well as those with low vision or people who were born blind. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
It looks like Saturn has edged out Jupiter as the leader when it comes to having the most moons in the solar system. A team of astronomers led by Scott Shepard of the Carnegie Institute of Science has found 20 new moons orbiting Saturn, bringing the total number to 82. Jupiter, meanwhile, has 79 moons. The astronomers say each of these new moons is about 5 kilometers wide. 17 orbit Saturn in retrograde, meaning they move in an opposite direction than the planet. The other three moons orbit in the same direction or in prograde. The Carnegie Science Institute has opened up a contest for naming the newly discovered moons. For details, visit carnegiescience.edu/namesaturn's moons. That's all in one word. Good luck. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Remember to get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, download our podcast, and take VOA Asia with you. Visit our VOAnews.com program page, see us on YouTube, follow us on VOA Asia Twitter, and let's hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and our email, VOAasia@VOAnews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thank you to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and the VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hai Young and Afra. Also, thanks to you, our listener, and our affiliate stations, among them, Facebook, VOA Burmese in Myanmar, the voice of Cheng Rung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at the Cheng Rung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. Enjoy your day.